You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. Very happy to have you with us on this Thursday, March the 29th. It's 6 minutes past 8 o'clock. As he battles a reoccurrence of the colon cancer he fought 2 years ago, White House spokesperson Tony Snow is far from alone. The National Cancer Institute says more than 150,000 Americans will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer this year. More than 52,000 will die from the disease. The Institute says in about half of the colon cancer patients, the disease will eventually spread to the liver. It's the most common site to which the cancer spreads, and that's what happened to Snow. The White House says there's cancer in his liver and elsewhere. Tony Snow is saying that he hopes to return to his job as White House press secretary or White House spokesperson. He is the second national figure in less than a week who has announced a reoccurrence of cancer. Of course, Elizabeth Edwards announced that her breast cancer has returned. It's spread to a rib and elsewhere, and made much news when she and her husband, presidential candidate John Edwards, decided to continue on with his presidential campaign. We will talk this hour about cancer today and living with cancer today as opposed to perhaps dying with cancer today. We'll talk about how people cope and how society copes, and we welcome your participation and certainly maybe your personal experiences with dealing with cancer. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We are happy to have with us Dr. Kyle Holen. He is a member of the UW Paul Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center, where he is also head of gastrointestinal oncology and also an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine. Good morning.
Good morning.
So that about right from the National Cancer Institute, that more than 150,000 Americans will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer this year, and about 52,000 will die.
That's correct. I think the actual number of people diagnosed is about 156,000.
Yeah. And it is common for a colon cancer to spread eventually to the liver.
The most common site of the cancer to spread is to local lymph nodes, but it's also very common for the cancer to spread to the liver.
Yeah.
Now, Tony Snow's example is a little bit different. I don't have access to his medical records, of course, but from reports that I've read, it appears that the cancer is on the surface of the liver and not inside the liver. And the reason why this distinction is important is it's a little bit more difficult to contain the cancer if the cancer has spread to multiple sites inside the abdominal cavity.
Yeah. So, what will Tony Snow be going through over the next weeks and months?
Well, I'm sure that he's already had a surgery. So once he recovers from surgery, I'm sure that he will be starting an aggressive chemotherapy regimen. And hopefully the chemotherapy regimen will contain this tumor for quite some time, although unfortunately it's very unlikely that he will achieve a cure.
Yeah. I was looking here. It says that when the cancer has spread in colon cancer, as the example, chemotherapy is used, but it can turn cancer into something people can live with, according to one surgeon, that a reoccurrence of colon cancer is not a death sentence.
Well, that's very accurate. You know, nowadays with our chemotherapy, and in particular with our very technically skilled surgeons, we can oftentimes cure people once the cancer has spread, particularly if the cancer has spread to the liver and nowhere else. We can cure people in as much as 40% of the cases if the cancer is only in the liver. Unfortunately, with Tony Snow's situation, he had cancer that had spread in multiple places beyond the liver, and he had cancer on the surface of the liver, and that ends up being a more difficult cancer to cure.
Yeah. Well, but what does that mean? You can't cure it, but you can live with it for some time.
That's correct. It used to be, before we had chemotherapy, or effective chemotherapy for that matter, for colon cancer, that people would only live 4 to 6 months. Nowadays, with the chemotherapy advances that we've had in the last 10 years, people are living 2 years and longer.
Yeah. And is there also hope that in perhaps those 2 years or longer that yet another advancement could be made?
Yep. We are coming up with advances every week. I'm sure that people are also reading in the news advances with MRI detection of breast cancer. And there are many new treatments that have been FDA approved in the last year for a whole variety of cancers.
Yeah. What do you make of that recommendation from the American Cancer Society that women who are higher risk of developing breast cancer undergo MRIs as well as mammograms?
Well, they came out with that recommendation specifically for younger women who are at very high risk for breast cancer. And they did that because we've known for quite some time that mammograms in younger women are not the best test to try and pick up cancers. Mammograms aren't very sensitive when there is quite a bit of dense breast tissue. And therefore, we've known that MRIs have been a better way to screen women for quite some time. However, the evidence has been somewhat lacking on its impact on survival and picking up breast cancers. And recently, the American Cancer Society reviewed the evidence to date and realized that it probably was better for younger women who are at high risk to have MRI studies.
Yeah, even though it doesn't affect survival rates?
Well, it looks like it does. You know, the problem is that we need very long-term studies to determine whether or not these screening tests will change overall survival. And I think as a correlate measure, just making sure that we can pick up breast cancer earlier and in more cases is reasonable.
Yeah. Well, that kind of dovetails us into the Elizabeth Edwards situation, too. Is this common for someone who is fighting breast cancer, who goes into remission, to then have it reoccur? I think it was in her bones, in her rib and maybe a hip?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is fairly common for breast cancer to recur. It all, of course, depends, however, on her original breast cancer, whether there are lymph nodes involved, the pathology of her original breast cancer, how large it was. All of those things are important when determining what the risk is for recurrent disease. But unfortunately, even with our best chemotherapy, there are many, many women that have their breast cancer recur, sometimes as far as 15 or 20 years after their original diagnosis.
One of the reasons, Doctor, that we wanted to do this program is we did a program following the Elizabeth Edwards experience and talking about the presidential campaign of her husband and what this all meant. And we had a caller who called into that saying, the C word, cancer, has way too much power, that if Elizabeth Edwards had diabetes, which is a chronic illness that could conceivably end up killing her, that we wouldn't be doing that program, that we should view cancer as a chronic illness and not necessarily a death sentence. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would in most cases. You know, nowadays, as opposed to 30 years ago, we have a huge population of people that have a history of cancer and have beat cancer. And we're starting a program here at the University of Wisconsin looking at survivorship issues and how we can make sure that people are living well after their diagnosis of cancer. And that involves a whole variety of things, including focusing on nutrition and exercise and good mental health. And I think it's very, very important that we look at how well people are surviving cancer and what we can do to help them continue to live a very healthy life after their diagnosis.
Yeah. Do we know whether having a positive outlook, as it seems Elizabeth Edwards and Tony Snow both have, is important in that, living with cancer?
Yeah, it's very important to have a positive outlook. I can tell you there are multiple studies that have shown that people who have a positive outlook and are willing to proceed with chemotherapy and other recommendations by doctors do much better than people who decide that they are no longer want to live with the disease.
Yeah. A personal story, my mother-in-law last year was diagnosed with lung cancer, and she just said, I'm not going to do anything about it, and she died a month later.
Yeah. Yeah, I unfortunately run into a lot of cases like that in my clinic. And depression is very difficult to treat when patients have cancer. There are quite a few people that decide that they don't want treatment. And it's very unfortunate given that we have so many treatments that help people nowadays.
Yeah, lung cancer is a tough one, though, isn't it?
Oh, very difficult to treat, yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about cancer, living with cancer, coping with cancer, especially in light of the reoccurrence of cancer that we've heard about just in this past week of two prominent figures, White House spokesperson Tony Snow, a reoccurrence of his colon cancer announced this week, and of course the reoccurrence of breast cancer, or the spread of breast cancer to the bones in Elizabeth Edwards' case. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest about treatment of cancer, dealing with cancer, coping with cancer. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our guest is Dr. Kyle Holen, who is the head of gastrointestinal oncology at the UW's Comprehensive Cancer Center, an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 20 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 29th. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6. It's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 4, Ben and his guest will talk about the latest developments in Iran and tension over those captured British sailors, the U.S. Presence, naval maneuvers in the Persian Gulf right now, and the new UN sanctions. So that's the topic after 4 o'clock this afternoon, At Issue with Ben Marins. We're talking about living with cancer in society today as opposed to dying of cancer. Talking about cancer as Elizabeth Edwards announced that her cancer has returned, as did White House Press Secretary Tony Snow. And we are talking with a physician, Dr. Kyle Holen, and we will welcome in now Kathy Eli, who is Vice President of After Breast Cancer Diagnosis. She is a breast cancer survivor and is 2.5 years out from her second diagnosis. Good morning.
Good morning, Joyce.
So tell me about the first time you discovered you had cancer.
Well, the first time for me was in October of 2000, and it was a routine mammogram. About 4 months before that, I had had my routine mammogram and had some suspicious spots, so they had me come back 4 months later to check, and when they needed to do extra films, it was like I just knew that it was not going to be good results. And I was diagnosed with a suspicious lump. Initially, they thought a lumpectomy would take care of it, and I had a series of surgeries on Fridays over the next 3 weeks, and it went from being something that was thought to be localized to being infiltrating lobular carcinoma, and ended up with a mastectomy. It was a mixed blessing because my fear, as you, it's just devastating to get this news. Mm-hmm. It's so, the unknown is so frightening that, and you're having to learn a lot of new terms and make decisions very quickly, and it just is overwhelming.
Yeah, but eventually, after all of that treatment, you did go into remission?
I did, mm-hmm. And actually I felt blessed by, in a sense, by having to have the mastectomy because I didn't have to have chemotherapy and radiation, which brings in a whole new realm of issues.
Yeah, well, like what?
Well, when you think about it, chemotherapy is really, it's a very strong poisonous thing that you're putting in your body to
right.
kill those drug, the cancer cells. And that has unknown reactions. Everybody reacts to it differently. We don't really know how it impacts our body 20 years from now. So I did, you know, people say, oh, but my gosh, you had a mastectomy. And I think in any situation, we all look at it as we can see, we can either feel that we have it worse than other people, or we can look at the people around us who are suffering more. And I guess that was, in hindsight, the reaction mm-hmm. I was having.
So what happened then? How did you learn it had your cancer returned?
Well, I'm very diligent about mm-hmm. checkups, which is why we caught the cancer the first time in the very early stages and could deal with it very proactively. 3 years later, I had my routine mammogram, as I did every year, and there were some suspicious areas that were just going to be watched, and it was kind of, I mean, you live with this. Cancer is like a chronic disease, and mm-hmm. we fight it, but and as time goes on, you think about it less and less on a daily basis, but it is always something, there's that fear of the possibility of a returning. And third year mammogram looked a little bit suspicious. Fourth year, a lot of suspicious cells. Then I had, of course, there's additional tests that are done, and it was determined that the same type of cancer was now occurring in the other breast. And I have to say, it again was devastating, but my response was so much more proactive this time. It didn't take me very long at all to make the decision to have another mastectomy.
Yeah. Less fear or more fear?
It was a very mixed. It was frightening, and yet mm-hmm. there was a sense of relief because it's what all of us fear, and it was almost like this sense of relief of, okay, it's happening, I'm going to deal with it, and yeah. I will move on.
Yeah. So are you again in remission, or are you treating active cancer as we speak?
Well, at this point, no. I chose to be very aggressive and have the mastectomy,
mm-hmm.
and because of that, I am no longer on drugs, but I have to say that once you've been diagnosed with cancer, it's always there. It is truly like a chronic disease, and you always have in the back of your mind, it's a possibility of it reoccurring, and it's just something you live with. But
yeah.
People are, once they're diagnosed with cancer, their personalities generally don't change. They respond to that diagnosis in the same general way they've dealt with life. That's been my experience in being a mentor for ABCD after breast cancer diagnosis. I see that people's personalities don't change. If you're proactive and you want to face something, then that's what you do. That's how you respond to it.
Yeah, and ABCD is a support group or what?
Yes, it's well, we don't have support groups per se. What it is it's a one-to-one, very personalized mentoring. We receive calls from women or men who have been diagnosed with breast cancer, and we ask a lot of questions about what type of diagnosis, what type of cancer, what stage in life you're in. And then we match that person up with someone as close with that same profile as we possibly can to give that individual an opportunity to speak to someone, to a survivor who's several years out, sometimes 15 years out from their initial diagnosis, just to provide more personalized emotional support to allow the newly diagnosed person to ask questions, to express concerns, express fears, just to give them that personalized one-to-one support.
Yeah. And when you heard the news of Elizabeth Edwards and her breast cancer spreading to her bones, what was your reaction?
It brings back up those initial feelings of that devastating diagnosis. And my heart just goes out to them. I admire her desire to continue her life as normally as possible, and her strength and the strength in their relationship of them saying they're going to deal with this, but they're not going to stop living. And it's an incredible role model. And I know they've been criticized. I've heard both sides of the issue, and I just, you can't, with a diagnosis of cancer, you can't stop living. You just, it's something we have to face.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Joyce.
Kathy Eli is Vice President of After Breast Cancer Diagnosis. More information at abcdmentor.org or the toll-free number 1-800-977-4121. 1-800-977-4121. We are talking this hour about living with cancer. And we still have online with us right now Dr. Kyle Holen, who is with the Comprehensive Cancer Center at UW-Madison. He's also head of gastrointestinal oncology and assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine, talking with us about cancer in society today and how we treat cancer now, how we deal with cancer, how we cope with cancer, and we welcome your thoughts and questions for him. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Dr. Holen, a reaction to Kathy Eli's story?
Yeah, you know, I hear these stories very frequently. Although I haven't been diagnosed with cancer myself, it is a devastating diagnosis, no matter what stage a person is in. And I agree with her that it's very difficult to predict who is going to have a reaction where they want to go on and continue with their lives as normally as possible. And there are other people who decide that they're willing to give up, and it doesn't matter what the age of the person is or if they're a man or a woman or what type of cancer it is. People all react very differently when they are given this diagnosis. I also want to briefly mention as a correction that my good friend and colleague, Dr. Dan Mulcairn, is the head of gastrointestinal oncology at UW. I am, however, a medical director of a group called Team Survivor. And Team Survivor is a organization that helps women continue on with their lives after their diagnosis of breast cancer or any cancer by helping them become more physically active. And that's a local organization here in Madison.
Well, we just promoted you.
Right.
the Team Survivor is specifically women who have had breast cancer or any cancer?
Any cancer. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful organization for women who, we've noted that in the past, that women who exercise and become more physically active have a much easier time tolerating some of the side effects of chemotherapy and end up living longer after their diagnosis of cancer. So this is an organization that promotes physical exercise and well-being after women are diagnosed with cancer. And these women are doing amazing things. They're participating in triathlons. They have a dragon boat racing, and they have regular meetings at our sports medicine clinic to make sure that they're in good physical shape.
So what is that? That tells us that there's more to treating cancer than chemotherapy, right?
That's definitely true. You know, oftentimes as doctors, we learn so much about the disease that we tend to focus on treating the disease, and we don't tend to focus so much on treating the person. And these organizations like ABCD and Team Survivor really help us focus on the individual and not so much on the cancer.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phone. Sylvia in Brantwood. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share my experience a little bit because when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I called everybody that I knew that had gone through this, and there were maybe five or six people. And then after those calls, within a day or two, it was a no-brainer decision. I had a mastectomy, and 2 months later, we were down in Florida golfing.
2 months later, did you say?
You bet.
Yeah, and your everything is okay with you now, Sylvia?
For the last 4.5 years, yes, it has been.
Yeah. Do you have to? You have to continue to have mammograms and the like, though.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's a given.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good luck to you.
Thank you. Just wanted to share that because some of the women seem to be afraid of a mastectomy, and it's just. It seems to me that this is the way to go. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you think women are afraid of mastectomies, Dr. Holland?
Well, I think women are afraid of the whole process, not only mastectomies, lumpectomies, but also chemotherapy and radiation if it's necessary. It's a lot to take in a very, very short period of time. You know, what happens generally is there's an abnormal mammogram, and within days there's a biopsy, and within days you find out it's cancer, and then within a few more days you're meeting with oncologists and surgeons and radiation doctors, and it all happens so quickly. It can be very, very overwhelming, as our guest had mentioned earlier. So support groups are very important, and I think it's also very important to talk to other people who've been through this process, so that they can reassure you that you'll get through it and you'll be okay. There's just no easy way to give a person a diagnosis like this and try and make a whole bunch of decisions in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of Sylvia's situation there, where she, you know, she had the mastectomy, but now she, you know, she has to continue with follow-ups to make sure. Is it likely that breast cancer would occur in the other breast?
Well, it's interesting. There was recently a report in the New England Journal of Medicine about women who are diagnosed with breast cancer. Those women underwent an MRI of the other breast after they were diagnosed with cancer in one breast, and it turns out that they were able to pick up cancer in the opposite breast in 3% of the time. Now, that may not seem like a lot, but in general, you wouldn't expect to pick up cancers in the breast, and this was in women who had had a mammogram in the other breast, and the mammogram was negative. So it is fairly common to have cancer in the other side of the in the other breast, and overall, about 10% of the women who are diagnosed with cancer will end up with cancer in the opposite breast.
Then, you know, is there the treatment option of having the mastectomy and going through some sort of chemo, or is that
No, that is one of the options. It really depends on the size of the cancer and. It depends on whether the cancer has spread to lymph nodes. We make our recommendations based on the risk of a cancer returning. And if that risk is greater than 10%, we recommend that they undergo chemotherapy, because we can reduce that risk significantly with chemotherapy and with hormone treatment.
Our next caller is Joan in Milwaukee. Hi, Joan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just, doctor, have to applaud those people who are fighting the cancer. Edwards has no choice but to go on if she wants to live. Attitude is so important. My husband was diagnosed with colon cancer over 10 years ago, and we went to Mayo's. If he was going to have a colonoscopy, forget it. He'd live a year, he'd climb his mountain, and that would be it. Well, after arguing that out and saying there could be an in-between ileoscopy or whatever it is, he continued, and he found out there was life after a colonoscopy, and that was over 10 years ago. The cancer jumped from the colon to the lungs. They operated, they got it all. 2 years later, it jumped to the lungs again. They operated, they didn't get it all. A year later, the lung man said, not his regular physician, but the lung man said, if the cancer goes as fast as it has the last 6 months, you have 6 months to live. We packed up, we went out to the Teton Mountains, got him up on a horse, first time in his life at 83. He rode around Jenny Lake looking at these mountains that he knew like the back of his hand because he taught climbing when he was young there. Came back home, a CAT scan, the cancer had stopped cold. Mind over matter. 2 years later, it jumped again. Again, we planned this trip. But that time, the doctor was going to treat it with chemo, put a port in his chest, and then decided to go with tomography. Well, he left the port with the statement, it's not hurting anything. It was hurting something. He got a blood clot, and they couldn't use thinner because of that. And this doctor, whom he trusted, said, get to a hospice, do what you need to do. For 3 days, my husband would not talk to anyone. And this was a man you never knew he had cancer. He was always talking about other people and always talking about the land. Well, for those 3 days, that's when he left down his hope. And indeed, we did end up in the hospice. And for the next 2 months in hospice, I was trying to talk him to get out again. But those 3 days, I truly believe, with his defenses down, the cancer overtook. But he had to get his land put into the Nature Conservancy. He had to see that his books with Frost, that Frost, Robert Frost, had been a friend. His life in hospice was a joy to other people dying because he never talked about himself. He always was reaching out and helping other people be the best. No one knew he had cancer unless they really delved in and said, well, Fred, what's with you?
Yeah.
And
well,
I just want to say that he did all the things that you need to do. He ate the right food. He got Red Skeleton movies. He listened to good music. And he did all of those things that might help this. And it was always positive.
Yeah, and it did. He did have many, many more years after that initial diagnosis.
Over 10 years if he had given in the first time.
Yeah. Dr. Holen?
Yeah, that's a great story. What an amazing man. It sounds like I think that's a testament to our surgeons who are technically extraordinarily gifted in what they can do nowadays with removing cancers. I think it's a testament to his doctors and oncologists and particularly to the patient himself, and that the right attitude means a lot when you're trying to treat this disease.
We'll take a short pause and then take more calls with your stories, your experiences of dealing with, coping with, cancer. Our guest is Dr. Kyle Holen, who is with the UW-Madison Comprehensive Cancer Center, an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine, medical director of Team Survivor. And we welcome your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will talk about the House and Senate bills for emergency war spending, troop withdrawal, and President Bush's vow to veto. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about coping with cancer this hour and living with cancer in light of the second announcement of a high-profile person announcing a reoccurrence of cancer. The White House spokesperson Tony Snow announced this week that the colon cancer that he successfully fought 2 years ago has returned and spread to his liver and elsewhere. He had surgery and will undergo much more treatment, but he hopes to return to his job as a spokesperson for the White House. This news coming less than a week after Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards, announced that her breast cancer had returned, showing up in her bones, an incurable but treatable form of breast cancer. And that's what we're talking about, treating cancer when cancer returns, living with cancer. Bob in DeForest is next. Hello, Bob. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I wanted to ask Dr. Holen, there was a Newsweek article a while back regarding treatment, and there was, I don't want to say like an uproar, but some of the scientists from Harvard and Mayo were kind of upset about a lot of the funding going for these cocktail drugs to target actually the tumor site. And the article was mentioning saying, well, you can live without a prostate, you can live without a potentially a breast or a lung, but the metastasis seems to be the big problem, and there have been very few articles or research done on metastasis, and if we somehow can focus our efforts this way, the article said this is no way to cure cancer, the current funding for just targeting the tumor site. Is there a possibility we can raise our hopes for Americans by targeting metastasis in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
That's an excellent question. I do think that we should all be very hopeful about new treatments on the horizon. And most of the early phase trials that we are performing right now are on people who have metastatic disease. And they are looking at drugs that specifically target the cancer and hopefully leave the rest of the body spared. As a guest earlier on mentioned, that chemotherapy is somewhat poisonous. Well, in a way that's true, but we are perfecting our techniques a little bit and targeting more of the cancer and less the rest of the body. And so the chemotherapy nowadays is much less toxic than it was, say, 20, 30 years ago. Now, I'm glad you brought this up because I just wanted to touch briefly on new cancer treatments. And the only way for us to find new cancer treatments is to fund cancer research. And unfortunately, the funding for cancer research has gone down over the last few years as funds have been diverted elsewhere. And it's quite telling to look at the funding for cancer research and realize that over the last 50 years of cancer research, if you add up all the money that has been spent on cancer research in 50 years, it would amount to approximately 1 year of what we spend on the war in Iraq. Now, whether you're for or against the war in Iraq is a separate issue, but it just goes to show where our priorities lie currently and where we're spending our money.
Yeah. And cancer rates have been, for the most part, or going down?
Well, that is true. Mm-hmm. We're becoming more successful at picking up cancer at much earlier stages. People are living much longer with cancer than they had in the past. It used to be that after about 5 years of your diagnosis of cancer in the 1970s, only about half the people would be alive at 5 years. And nowadays, we're up to two-thirds of the people alive at 5 years after their diagnosis of cancer. However, cancer still remains very, very common. About half of all men during their lifetime will be diagnosed with cancer, and about one-third of women during their lifetime will be diagnosed with cancer. So it remains a major health problem in the U.S.
Half of men?
One-half of all men during their lifetime will be diagnosed with cancer.
And one-third of women. And are there certain types of cancer that are more typical in men?
The most common cancer in men is prostate cancer, mm-hmm. and about one of every six men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer. And the most common cancer in women is breast cancer, and about one of every eight women mm-hmm. will be diagnosed with breast cancer during their lifetime.
Back to the phones. Bob in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My wife was diagnosed with metastatic colon cancer in December, so I thank you for your topic and your guest.
Mm. I'm sorry.
I just had a couple questions for Dr. Holen. One, would he agree with the cure rates for resectable colon cancer is about 1 in 3 if they, with chemotherapy and negative margins? Also, when my wife had her surgery, they did not get negative margins, and she has since been on 7 cycles of chemo, FOLFOX, 4 with Avastin. I'm just wondering what the next step is after the 12 rounds. Is it a clinical trial with Trovax, more surgery, or just stick with the Avastin?
Thanks for calling in. So in regards to cure rates, actually we're doing pretty well with curing colon cancer, and it really depends on the stage of a person's cancer. However, for stage 1 and 2 and 3 colon cancer, we cure people about 75% of the time with surgery, and occasionally we'll use chemotherapy as well. Now, when a person has stage 4 colon cancer, the cure rate goes down significantly, and what stage 4 means is that the cancer has spread outside of the colon and lymph nodes to distant organs. In this case, I would agree with your estimation that anywhere between 25% and 40% of people with metastatic disease are cured nowadays with surgery and chemotherapy, so we're not doing quite as well with folks who have a distant metastases. In regards to your wife's treatment, after her chemotherapy, I would need a little bit more information about what to do next. It really depends on where her cancer is, whether or not you should refocus on the area where she had positive margins to see if that can be re-excised or even radiated. It may be important to continue with a different round of chemotherapy. But that would be something that I would need a little bit more information before I could give you advice.
Okay. Have you heard anything on Trovax?
I have. Right now, it is not something that we are commonly using outside of clinical trials. We still need more information about the true benefit of Trovax before we start administering it to people regularly.
Yeah. Bob, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Your wife was diagnosed initially, this is her first time with stage 4 colon cancer?
Yeah, she presented with a colon tumor, and then a CT showed 3 spots on the liver. They thought they might have been hemangiomas, but they ended up being tumors. So she was resected, but they couldn't get the negative margins.
Yeah, and how are you and she dealing with this?
She's doing quite well. She hasn't had to skip any chemos or delay any chemos, and we're doing okay. We got a 2-year-old, so it's a little tough. She's only 36, so...
Yeah.
My hope would be that after she finished about 6 months of chemotherapy that you could repeat a CT scan and she would remain disease-free, in which case I think a very close observation with her and surveillance with repeat scanning and even sometimes we'll use PET scanning to make sure that the cancer doesn't come back is reasonable.
Bob, our best wishes to you and your wife. Is this what Tony Snow has then? Is stage 4?
That's correct. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's a bit complicated to compare various people with stage 4 disease. People like Bob's wife, we have a better shot at curing them because oftentimes, when colon cancer has spread to the liver, it's relatively contained inside the liver, and with surgery and chemotherapy, we have some chance of curing them. Unfortunately, with Tony Snow, his cancer has spread by way of spreading throughout the abdomen and abdominal cavity, and he has something called peritoneal carcinomatosis. that type of cancer is much, much more difficult to contain and more difficult to cure.
Yeah. Next, we go to Barbara in Milwaukee. Hello, Barbara.
Hello. Thank you so much for the program. Mm-hmm. I come from a family that unfortunately has a lot of experience with our relatives in breast cancer, prostate, uterine, cervical, colon cancer, and lung cancer. Wow. However, yesterday my father was just diagnosed with rectal cancer, and we really know nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could offer some resources and perhaps support information. And I just thank you for everything that you've given so far on the program.
And you're saying rectal cancer as opposed to colon cancer.
Correct.
Well, thank you for calling in. I'll direct you to a couple of websites if you have access to the Internet. One website is www.cancer.org. That's the American Cancer Society website, and they have lots of information about every different type of cancer and information regarding support groups. I will say that the NIH has a good website, which would be www.nih.gov. And if you click to the National Cancer Institute, they have lots of information for patients about the cancer and various treatment. There's also a website by the American Society of Clinical Oncology called People Living with Cancer. So that's www.pwlc.org. And that website, again, provides quite a bit of information and support for people who are diagnosed with cancer. I will tell you that rectal cancer is not quite as common as other cancers that we've been talking about today. There are about 30,000 or so cases diagnosed in the U.S. each year. Rectal cancer is oftentimes treated very similarly to colon cancer. However, there's one major exception, and that is more often we'll use radiation treatment for rectal cancer. So I would encourage you not only to seek out advice from a cancer specialist or an oncologist, but also from a radiation oncologist to see what they may be able to add as far as the treatment options.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Barbara. And you, since you live in Milwaukee, you might also get some more information at Frederick Hospital in Milwaukee. They have several support groups, including, well, that ABCD group, the guest we spoke to earlier in the hour, the After Breast Cancer Diagnosis Group, is through Frederick Hospital, and there are many, many more. So you might want to check there for to see if there's some help. 800-272-3666. 800-272-3666. That's for Frederick Hospital. Thanks very much for the call. Carol in Oshkosh, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question has to do with these full body scans as a preventative. And I'm just wondering, is that the type of scan that if a person had, it would kind of pinpoint cancer throughout the body as opposed to just having like an MRI for breast cancer and then another test for cancer in a different part of the body?
Yeah.
And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. What about these full body scans? Are they worth it or not?
That's a good question. Unfortunately, full body CAT scans, if that's what the caller is referring to, have not been proven to be useful in screening for cancer. It turns out that there is a small amount of radiation that's involved in doing CAT scans, and to subject the population to the radiation and the expense of these scans without a clear benefit, it's still not something that we recommend routinely. She might have been referring to PET scans. PET scans are scans that are used more and more commonly today to try and find cancers. PET scans are scans where we do scan the whole body, and what happens is the cancer picks up glucose a little bit more commonly, and we radio label glucose, and then we scan the whole body to see where the hot areas are, where there's a radiation labeled to the glucose. However, PET scans currently are only used to stage a person who already has a cancer diagnosis, and to date have not been used as a screening tool.
Yeah. Bill in Hill's Corners, we're almost out of time, Bill, but I want to let you on. Go ahead.
Yes, my wife had cancer, breast cancer about 7 years ago, and right now we're just really, really cautious about things that we expose ourselves to, you know, in the environment that might lead to it coming back. I just wondered if he had any thoughts on, you know, things in our environment that might contribute to cancers.
Yeah, can you answer that in less than a minute, Doctor?
Well, I'll do my best. Unfortunately, we do not have randomized studies to show that anything in the environment really has an impact on recurrence of the cancer, other than we do recommend a healthy diet, no smoking, certainly, and plenty of exercise.
We'll leave it there then. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be here today.
Dr. Kyle Holen, who is a member of the UW Paul P. Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center, an assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine, also medical director of Team Survivor. These are, it's a group of women who have survived cancer who are involved in athletic activities. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.